down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, July 14th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we are going to be talking about the fall of Christian Horner and the future of Red Bull Racing. For those of you who don't know, Christian Horner was the team principal of Red Bull Racing in Formula One, the longtime team principal, and last week he got fired in a shocking move that shook the foundation of the Formula One world. Christian Horner has been around forever, so him getting sacked out of nowhere was quite the shock, and it necessitated an episode of this podcast, even though it happened several days ago at this point. But regardless, we're going to talk about it. So, as I said, Christian Horner was a founding member of Red Bull Racing, hired by Dietrich Mateschitz and Helmut Marko to lead the team back in 2005. At the time, Horner was leading a successful Formula 3000 team. Formula 3000 was one of the series that is currently that would be equivalent to today's Formula 2. A team he had established just a few years prior named Arden Racing was winning championships at the time. They won championships from 2002 to 2004 in Formula 3000. And this got Horner on Mateschitz and Marco's radar from a team principal standpoint because he had built the team himself and the team was highly competitive in only a few years. Things went well for years until Dietrich Mateschitz died in 2022. Before then, things were rather copacetic at Red Bull Racing. There were ups and downs and staff would come and go, but things were steady and even and the team would go between peaks of dominance and being just contenders, but things never got bad. And then Dietrich Mateschitz dies in 2022. With his death, a key buffer between Christian Horner and Helmut Marko was now gone. While Helmut Marko isn't technically an employee of Red Bull Racing, he is a highly regarded advisor for Red Bull Corporation and has a lot of political influence in the Red Bull Racing hierarchy. Slowly, the Austrian side of Red Bull ownership, which owns 49% of the company, began consolidating power, which created a very contentious power dynamic between Marko and Christian Horner. And then you had the Thai investors who own Red Bull as a beverage company. And things got very political, whereas they didn't used to be when Dietrich Mateschitz acted as a buffer, insulating Horner from the political machinations of the team apparatus. While there was political tensions building in the organization, at the same time, a string of high-level personnel left Red Bull for other teams. These included Rob Marshall, who was the head of aerodynamics, who left for the same job at McLaren. After Marshall came the most painful of losses, Adrian Newey. Adrian Newey, like Colin Chapman before him, is one of the great aerodynamic wizards of the racing world and is responsible for numerous championship-winning race cars with McLaren, Red Bull, and other teams in Formula One history. Newey didn't like the political and working environment under Horner following Mateschitz's death and left to be the chief designer at Aston Martin Formula One, which is going to be a works Honda outfit in 2026. Next, Red Bull sporting director Jonathan Wheatley left the team to take over leadership of Sauber, basically gaining a promotion to Christian Horner's job within the Sauber organization. Then finally, Will Courtney, the head of strategy at Red Bull, left to become the head of strategy at McLaren, though he has yet to take over that role since his gardening leave has not expired yet. For those who don't know, gardening leave is a provision where before you can leave one job to take over a job of the same scope and responsibilities with another team, you have to be away for a year. That way you're not just leaving and taking trade secrets with you. So he hasn't gotten off his gardening leave yet. At the time, Christian Horner said that the team could adapt without the position, the people they had lost, the personnel. But cracks began to show. Things began to really unravel in 2024, when accusations of controlling and inappropriate behavior from Horner came to light in the press, which obviously endangered his status as an untouchable presence in Formula One. So there were accusations of bullying, harassment, sexual misconduct, which played out in the press and really tainted Horner's image in the press, though the team did clear him of misconduct and he got to keep his job. Former Formula One driver and father of Max Verstappen, Jos Verstappen, has long criticized Red Bull and Christian Horner for the way the team is run. Rumors of the team not listening to drivers' feedback have persisted for years, even as Max Verstappen dominated the championship in 2022 and 2023. The 2024 season was an up-and-down season for Red Bull, with the team winning the Drivers' Championship handily, but losing the more sought-after Constructors' Championship to a resurgent McLaren team now being led by Rob Marshall in the aerodynamics department. As if further reinforcing Jos Verstappen's point, the treatment of number two drivers over the last 3 years under Horner has also been a source of criticism. Horner signed consistent, if unspectacular, driver Sergio Perez to an expensive and warranted long-term extension early in 2024. I think it was in January. The only problem with this is that Perez's form on track fell off a veritable cliff, resulting in him only scoring 9 total points in the final 8 races of the 2024 season and costing Red Bull a 4th consecutive Drivers' Championship. Then, in December of 2024, Christian Horner and Red Bull bought out Sergio Perez, bought him out of his contract and let him go, spending an exorbitant amount of money to pay him not to drive for them after his shoddy results. Following that, Horner hired Red Bull Junior driver Liam Lawson to take over in the second Red Bull seat, but he was himself fired after only 2 races of the 2025 season that saw him failing to make it out of Q1, which is qualifying to determine who is 15th or better. So he didn't even qualify that well, and then finishing both races in 20th. After Lawson's short, disastrous stint in Red Bull, Horner elevated Yuki Tsunoda from the Red Bull satellite team Racing Bulls. This move was viewed with trepidation for Yuki, as his results with the Red Bulls car was very good, and fans of his had little faith that he'd be able to drive the problematic second Red Bull car. Many were worrying that he wasn't going to do well and it was going to cost him his F1 career and he'd be out of a seat and everything, which is kind of playing out. The car itself is something else worth mentioning, as that has been an important role player in this whole mess. It is no secret that Max Verstappen likes a very pointy car that takes effort to keep from oversteering, allowing him to extract tons of speed and lap time out of a car most would find very hard to handle. This isn't uncommon in other motorsports, such as IndyCar. We've seen drivers who revel in this style of driving, such as Pato O'Ward, though Pato O'Ward is nowhere near Max Verstappen's talent level. Regardless of that, Red Bull developed a car over the course of the new ground effect era of F1, which is 2022 to 2025, that has become increasingly pointy in the front. On the face of it, this seems like a wise choice, developing a car to suit your number one driver, who in himself is one of the greatest drivers of all time. In reality, though, the car Red Bull has developed has become so difficult to drive that even Max Verstappen, one of the greatest drivers of all time, has struggled to drive it. The car now struggles with both front and rear instability, mid-corner instability, and is draggy on the straights. In other words, it oversteers, It has snap oversteer, snap understeer in the middle of corners. It's bad on corner exit. It has a very narrow operating window. It doesn't take care of its tires. It's very slow on the straights. In other words, it's a shitbox that only Max Verstappen is even remotely capable of driving. And he himself has struggled mightily in 2025 to drive it. As of July of 2025, Red Bull Racing is fourth in the Constructors' Championship behind championship-leading McLaren and contenders Ferrari and Mercedes, though Mercedes is in second in the Constructors. The second Red Bull Racing car has only scored 17 points through the first half of the 24-race season. To put it in perspective, that means through 12 races, they have 17 points. And I know for a fact, 7 of those points came in one result for Yuki Tsunoda. So, for reference, Max Verstappen has scored 165 points, which in and of itself pales in comparison to championship leader McLaren driver Oscar Piastri, who has scored 234 through 12 races. Horner's mismanagement of staff, horrible management of the driver lineup, and failure to develop a championship-contending car has caused many to wonder if Max Verstappen might exercise a performance clause in his contract and leave Red Bull Racing entirely. The rumored language of the clause is disputed, but most agree that it states that if Max isn't inside the top four in the driver's standings at the midway point in the season, he can opt out of his contract at the end of the year and move on to another team. To that end, Mercedes-Benz Formula One team, or Mercedes-Benz AMG Petronas Formula One team, or whatever they're called, has made very public overtures towards Max, indicating their willingness to do whatever it takes to get him driving for the German outfit. Furthermore, the overall leadership of the German auto manufacturer has given the F1 team tacit approval from the CEO himself to pursue Verstappen and sign him by any means necessary if the opportunity arises. The presence of rumors of Max leaving have become such a problem for Red Bull leadership, on top of the myriad of other issues for Red Bull, that leadership of Red Bull Racing, both in Thailand and in Austria, have now have more than enough incentive to fire Horner, which they promptly did last week. And they had to do this because with the way things were going, they had to do it now before the team completely unraveled. And we've seen this in other sports where you've got a good thing going and then certain players are traded away and you try to mask it with certain measures that stop working, and then you're losing people and the roster is not good, and the locker room is dysfunctional, and there's contention between the GM and the head coach, and then finally the team goes like 2-12 on a year or whatever, 2-14 or 2-15, and then you fire everybody, and it's too late, and it takes years and years and years to rebuild. So Red Bull Racing leadership had to bite the bullet and fire Horner now before things got truly bad. To that end, the future of Red Bull is uncertain, considering Horner has led the team since it became Red Bull Racing. It was formerly Jaguar, and before then it was Jordan, both of which were teams that were precariously managed and underfunded. And there are now several fronts that need to be tackled while the team transitions to a new rule set and rolls out its own in-house built powertrains with Ford badging. Red Bull Powertrains was the brainchild of Christian Horner, who was also the CEO. With his exit, the status of the engine program is now up in the air. Furthermore, following Horner's sacking, other key loyalists from his leadership were also sacked, leaving more holes in Red Bull staff that corporate has to fill. The 2026 rule set is a complex, risky change in rules and philosophy, and if Red Bull fails to get it right from the onset, it could be years before the team is back at the front. We've seen this with Ferrari. Ferrari got the rules set wrong, and they went from being second or third to being third or fourth consistently. And if it wasn't for Red Bull falling off, they'd probably be even worse in the constructors than they are right now. In my opinion, the list of priorities for Red Bull Racing should be in this order. Make sure Max Verstappen stays with Red Bull. If Max leaves, the team will be in a dire situation going into 2026, and it could be a half a decade before the team recovers. Next, they have to shore up their staff and ensure that more losses don't come in the transition, while also backfilling with new staff when necessary. They've lost a lot of good people. Adrian Newey, Rob Marshall, Kevin Courtney, Jonathan Wheatley. They've lost a lot of guys, and now they've got even more people leaving along with Christian Horner. So they need to backfill their staff and make sure they're not just moving deck chairs around the Titanic. They probably need to bring in some people from the outside to help bring new blood and new ideas into an organization that is on the wrong track. Their third priority needs to be that they need to ensure that there are no delays in the Red Bull Powertrains program. During the ground effect era, there has been an engine freeze where development has been static, which has greatly evened up the field. Well, the engine freeze is ending, starting with the 2026 season. So if the Red Bull power unit from Red Bull Powertrains, badged by Ford, if it is a flop, if it's down on power, or it's too unreliable, it could doom Red Bull Racing. As we've seen, Renault was a works team that built their own car, they built their own engines, and their engine was so underpowered compared to Ferrari and Mercedes that the team never achieved the heights that a works team is supposed to reach. It was disastrous, and the team is now a poorly run works Alpine unit owned by Renault that has stopped making their own engines and may or may not be for sale in the next couple of years. The fourth priority for Red Bull Racing, and a lot of these would be happening concurrently, but the fourth priority needs to be finding a suitable long-term solution for the second seat at Red Bull. It will be impossible for the team to win the constructors if one of their drivers is never near the front. Red Bull cannot survive if it's fighting a boxing match with one arm. It ain't gonna happen. They're gonna get knocked out. You ain't gonna win if you can't fight with both hands. So they need both drivers at the front, just like Mercedes, just like especially McLaren, Ferrari, all of them. Those teams have two good drivers at the front of the field working together. And even if one is a number two, he still has to be fast enough to stay with Max Verstappen and help him win. So they really need to find a solution that isn't just, well, let's elevate the latest, greatest, unprepared junior driver from F2 who isn't up to it. You know, maybe you need to poach somebody from another team's development program, like, you know, a guy like, you know, find the next Gabriel Bortoleto, or find the next Andrea Kimi Antonelli. Find that guy who has tons of promise that isn't just, well, he's in our program and it's his turn. You know, oh, Yuki Tsunoda is due. Well, Liam Lawson, we like him and he's in the league, but even though he has been just okay in Formula 2, we're going to bring him up anyway. No. Find a guy who's a stud, who's going to be able to be there in the front. That's going to be important for Red Bull. Because once again, if you don't have both cars at the front of the field, you ain't going to win a championship. The final priority for this transition needs to be empower staff at Red Bull Racing to develop a contending car for 2026 as 2025 slips out of reach at the halfway point in the season. The team needs to be empowered to take risks and follow ideas and not be hamstrung by, oh, we're going to get fired, they're going to fire everybody, they're going to ensure the staff that, yeah, build a car. If you think this idea is worth pursuing, pursue it. Don't play it safe, because a car built by playing it safe is a car that's going to be slow. So the team needs to be empowered to build the car the way the team wants to build a car without corporate interruptions. Ultimately, though, the fate of Red Bull Racing following Christian Horner's sacking is up in the air. and the aftermath of this moment won't be completely known until a few seasons have passed and the full scope of the situation and its side effects have played out. In other words, we don't know shit about what we don't even know, let alone about what we do know. So, we're going to have to wait and see how this all turns out as the Active Arrow era begins in 2026. Alright, I'm going to end it there. So, next week we're going to be doing an essay on the impact of scientific innovation on sports. We're going to be talking about access, technology, and safety. And that's going to talk about all sorts of issues that don't seem related to sports, but all come together to influence sports and how all of their innovations have made sports into the giant behemoth of entertainment and athletic prowess that it has become today. Then on July 28th, how Teddy Roosevelt saved football. That's a very fascinating story about how President Roosevelt saved football. Back when the sport was a deadly gladiatorial mess that was killing people on the field and fans were turning on it. He saved the game, helped modernize it, and helped turn it into the game that we have today. So those are the next 2 weeks. The week after that, August 4th, college football season preview and overall predictions. College football season is coming, so we're going to start talking about the Big Ten, the Big 12, SEC, Pac-12, ACC, all of the conferences, all the teams and players, and we're going to make predictions, and ooh, it's getting very exciting. We're getting into July, which means it's almost time for college football. So those are the next 3 episodes of the podcast. So for those of you listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or everywhere else that podcasts are available, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please consider liking, please consider leaving a review if you can, subscribe if you can, spread the word, tell your friends, tell your family, help spread the word of this channel so we can grow and reach more people, because I love doing this podcast. For those of you watching on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon, tell your friends, tell your family, share it on TikTok and Twitter, because I refuse to call it X, Facebook, spread the word, because thank you, thank you, thank you for finding the channel. We're still at only 9 subscribers, but maybe this will be the week that we'll get a 10th subscriber. So thank you so much for watching. My name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.